Here it comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. We're going to put a spotlight on a part of the Southwest that is one of my favorite places to be. And if you listen to any of my other shows, which I hope you have, you know that I am a big, huge Biosphere 2 fan. It is unbelievable to experience Biosphere 2. You don't visit it, you experience it. So thanks for joining us. This show is made possible through support from the University of Arizona, and everyone in Mrs. Green's world thanks them for that. They are great community partners. And my guest today is Kevin Bonine, who is Dr. Kevin Bonine. He is the Director of Education and Outreach at Biosphere 2, which now I feel like I'm inside, Kevin. I can call it Bio 2, to Bio 2 Science.
You're welcome to.
I love it. And he's from, he's got a vast background, College of Science, University of Arizona. It's so very wonderful to have you here, and we get to share more stuff and interesting things going on at Biosphere 2. There is definitely a new life force out there, and there are lots of exciting staff and lots of exciting programs, and hopefully lots more exciting visitors and excited visitors. So let's get started. Why don't you talk a little bit about the mission of Biosphere 2? And in the email that I got from you, I loved it because it is an iconic facility. I love that word. There's no place on earth like it. It is a wonder of the world. So why don't we just go a little bit into the mission and why it is such an iconic facility and why people listening from around the world want to put this on the top of their list to visit.
Sure. Well, thanks first for having me.
I'm pretty enthusiastic, Kevin.
Talk with you. Yeah. Biosphere 2 is a lot of fun. We have a lot of opportunities to talk about science and do education and outreach. So our missions are sort of twofold. One is the research that we're doing now, and that's why the University of Arizona was interested in taking on the Biosphere 2 management. We really felt that we could do some cutting-edge science using the facility, and we've built the Landscape Evolution Observatory, the hill slopes, and I know you're planning to talk with someone about that in a couple months. But it attracts 100,000 people, and it is this iconic facility that was built in the late 80s. The original missions were in the 90s. And people are intrigued by it. The architecture is amazing. The engineering is amazing. And the original mission was inspirational in the sense that we were trying to recreate all of the processes that ecosystems do so that we could safely send people to different planets.
And people lived there for a really long time. And I know from visiting out there, from taking tours and from the guests on the show, learned a lot about what it is to live under the glass and how hard it is to replicate or let alone duplicate what happens in nature, all those processes.
That's right. There were a lot of lessons that were learned from that original two-year mission with eight people living inside. There were challenges from the point of view of making the ecosystems work, providing the services that nature provides for us, clean water, clean air, the appropriate concentrations of oxygen, carbon dioxide. And things didn't go perfectly, but that's the nature of science.
That's
how experiments work.
That's
right. That's right. And so you don't expect things to go perfectly. Otherwise, you wouldn't do the experiment.
Like, what's the point if you don't learn anything from it?
And it's very ambitious to try and recreate global ecosystems inside of 3 acres. And it worked tremendously well. We learned all sorts of things. For example, if CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere go up, the acidity in the ocean also goes up. That CO2 dissolves into the water. And we learned that in Biosphere 2 back in the 90s when the CO2 concentrations went up. It was sort of foreshadowing
ocean acidification.
That's
right. And it's wiping out entire populations of oysters and at the very least. So now we know it's not just happening up there. It's reflected down here in our oceans. They're really at serious risk.
Right.
But when you talk about the iconic facility from the visitor point of view, you don't ever want to lose your tour guide because it's massively huge. I mean, it's all of a sudden you're in a lung that expands and contracts. That's my favorite thing that I bring up. And you're at the ocean shore 1 minute and in a very, very real a tropical jungle, the rainforest, the next minute, and then you're in the high desert. So it's really, for kids of all ages, it's kind of like your own little mini Disneyland without the rides, but so exciting.
There's a lot packed in there. You have multiple biomes, like you said, the forest, the savanna, the desert, the ocean. Then you had a big area that was the agricultural area for growing the food, which we're now doing our flagship experiment, the Landscape Evolution Observatory,
right,
looking at water and the evolution of soils and that sort of thing. And then you had the habitat, the human habitat, where the people lived. And all that's packed in a pretty small area, sealed off to the outside world. And one of the engineering marvels is those lungs that you talked about that expand and contract as the temperature of the air goes up and down. That's
right. You can see it. You can see the legs go up and down.
Yeah.
And this kid loved it, and so did the other little kids. We were all watching and seeing the expansion and contraction based on the air pressure.
That ceiling weighs like 20 tons.
Oh, my God. And we're walking out, and I said to this little boy, I said, how long do you think it took to build this? And he was so cute, and he said, at least 500 years. I mean, it was like out of the mouths of babes. I said, maybe that, not that long, but as many people that it would have taken 500 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so what about your job? And you said you're new to the biosphere. It's exciting to see all the new energy out there added to the already great energy of people and passion combined to get the exposure up in terms of what a treasure this is. So what is your job?
Well, the University of Arizona and the College of Science are very dedicated to outreach, interacting with the community, taking the scientific excitement and understanding that we have on campus and getting that out to the kids, the public, that sort of thing. And so my job is education and outreach. I focus on thinking about how can we best engage people, get them excited about science. Maybe they don't become scientists, but they become comfortable with science and they understand how important science is to their everyday life. If you think about how your car is made, if you think about where your food comes from, if you think about your telephone, all of those things require tremendous amounts of what we call the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math.
Right.
And there's a big push
for STEM education.
That's right. That's right. And we are hoping to be a big part of that.
And where your fish come from and which fish you should be eating and why not. And your water. I mean, it's complicated.
It's complicated.
It's covered extremely well. And that's a big job you took on. And I have to give kudos to Joaquin Ruiz because he is the ultimate, let's bring the community into our university and get our university out there. And I just, you know, he's been on the show and he's such a visionary.
So he is a visionary. He's inspirational on a personal level, but he's also inspired the institution to do a lot of things. You know, the College of Science lecture series that fills Centennial Hall with 2,500 people to talk about science. People come from out of town and they're blown away that you can get people to come.
SRO, and you better get there early.
That's right.
That's really
right.
True. I just went to the Happiness Project.
Those were
and
great
even
too.
That, those were, again, they had to do overflow. So
yep.
That's another visionary move. And I came away from them very happy. I just have to say that.
Well, I think what that says is something great about Tucson and our support for education and lifelong
education.
Learning.
Yeah, it was really, it's such an affirmation about what's
That's
going
right.
on here, if you ask me. Now, in the vast amount of your purview has to be wide because you're probably doing things for kids and adults and visitors and all of that. And in the notes that you sent me, there are two specialty tours that you're going to start, which are exciting because they're based on what the public wanted to know. So can you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. So you're exactly right. My purview is quite large, and we have lots of opportunities and possibilities.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can't tackle every single good idea. But we have a guided tour that people can take when they come to visit, and it gives you kind of an overview of everything. And what people really ask about is the original two-year mission from the 90s, and they ask about the architecture and engineering because it is so dramatic
oh my
and
God.
Unique. And so we're piloting two specialty tours, one focused on the history and one focused on the architecture and engineering. And we're going to roll those out this weekend, the weekend before Thanksgiving, one on Saturday, one on Sunday.
And that's exciting because this show will actually air on the 26th, but we'll put the words out and tweet it and get little tags out to get to Biosphere 2 so that people can go. Are they just going to be on Saturdays?
They are Saturday at 2 and Sunday at 2.
Okay, so weekends.
And
which
so
is,
you can
I'm
check
sure
the website.
Okay.
If we get enough attendance, we'll expand that either to multiple times during the day or to different days of the week. But we're going to start with what we think is the best time, which is 2 o'clock Saturday and 2 o'clock Sunday for those specialty tours.
And it's a really good weekend. So is it the and it will be the weekend after Thanksgiving, that Saturday as well?
Yes, indeed.
So many people have visitors.
We will continue it, you know, until at least
get the people
until the summer, if not through the summer.
Okay, so that one is the history of the original Biosphere 2 mission, Biospherian mission, and then is the architecture and engineering. And believe it or not, this person does not have an ounce of architecture and engineering in my brain. That would interest me a lot, because when you get downstairs and you start looking around, it's like, how did they ever conceive of this? I mean, massive is the word, and iconic, it's another word that comes to mind for me.
Yeah, well, one description has been a 3-acre greenhouse on top of a 2-acre aircraft carrier, the technosphere, to power all of this stuff.
To keep it going. And you just, I mean, it's, I know I sound a little bit overly enthusiastic, but I've been there lately, and it's something to get overly enthusiastic about.
But it really highlights the need for understanding what nature does for us that we take for granted. All of those things about water cycling and oxygen production and the role of sun and photosynthesis and making food, if you have to try and recreate all of that by hand using, you know, machines or human work power, that's really hard to do. And that's one of the lessons that we've learned.
This is one kind of a tangential question, but definitely relevant to what we're talking about. Do you think that the original mission really could foresee the shape we'd be in when you fast forward to 2013, and how this knowledge and expertise is so able to be applied because of what you learned? Like, was there a little crystal ball that said, folks, we better hurry up and figure a lot of this out because we're going to have to supply some answers?
I think so. And I think you had a smaller and smaller vocal minority talking about these issues as you go further and further back. But, you know, you read Aldo Leopold, you read folks before that. There were predictions in the 1950s of global warming with CO2 increases. So this isn't coming out of the blue per se. It's just that it's becoming more and more apparent to more and more people. And there's more and more evidence that people can sort of see for themselves.
So they can use it. I mean, you talk about applied research. It's something that little did we know how much importance would be placed on the research and the things they found out, and we better hurry up. It's like, because we things are accelerating, no fear and doubt, but like, let's be honest, folks, we've got to make some massive shifts.
Well, and that's a very powerful tool that we have. For example, the rainforest, one of the things that we do is we can manipulate the temperature, so we can mimic what will happen to the Amazon rainforest with increasing global temperatures. We can change the precipitation regimes, we can change the rainfall to mimic drought conditions, and then you look at the response, and then that gives you some idea of what you might expect in the real world.
And you're
going
to do that. I mean, Franklin Lane, who was our guide tour, who I said I'm now president of the Franklin Lane fan club, he'll love that. But he said, we're going to cut down on the precipitation because that's what's real on the, you know, watering and all that, but the precipitation levels. And I just encourage people, if you want to see what a lush rainforest feels like that you wouldn't want to get 2 feet from your guide, go see it now before they do create what's happening on Earth for real. Out there and see it lush and green, because it's really a wonder to behold.
Yeah, you mentioned Franklin Lane, and he's one of our staff. And, you know, the three things that we really thrive on is the iconic facility, the research, and the people that we have working there.
Oh, my gosh.
And they are amazing.
They are.
And
you're all amazing.
They're
stellar.
You know, retired professionals that come out and lead tours, retired educators, people that are engineers and biologists. It's really a neat, neat place.
And he rides his bike 48 miles. We have to bring that up, too. That was when I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm just, where's my car? Okay, another important component, which is near and dear to my heart, and from what we said off air, near and dear to your heart, is the education of the new young minds,
right?
Middle school and high school kids, STEM education. So you're working on and have a vision for a science academy in 2014. Tell us about that. It's really exciting.
So the plan is to do a week for middle school children in July of 2014, followed by a week for high school students. And we will let them do research, hands-on, inquisitive, inquiry-based learning. We'll do some leadership events. We'll take them to campus so they see what campus is like. And we're going to use University of Arizona students as sort of the chaperones or the residence assistants And so we really think that link between the youth going all the way up to the faculty and finding ways to fill in those steps in between is an extremely valuable way to get everyone engaged. And as you said, those STEM disciplines are extremely important for our future. Everything that we do and have in our day-to-day lives relies on those disciplines. The solutions to our future problems relies on those disciplines. And arguably, our economic future relies on those disciplines. And there's a big move to have biotechnology and those sorts of industries in Southern Arizona. If we don't have the workforce for those businesses, they're going to be less likely to relocate here.
And kids learn in so many different ways. I know that from my background. There's so many multiple intelligences. And what I loved going with kids, I've always gone with my grandkids and other kids. We're on the tour with Moses Thompson from Monzo. It's watching the kids and how they want to touch things in a good way, not misbehaving way, but really experiment and learn in different ways. Those kids were not well behaved. They were engaged.
Right.
They were so listening. And every lab we went to, and they wanted to, I'm glad they didn't jump in the ocean, but they kind of wanted to. And the kids, you know, got down and started throwing rocks. I mean, it's just, it creates a learning environment that's exciting and not just book learning, which science can be really not so much fun if you're a middle school kid.
Yeah, well, as an educator, you know, I understand the value of the experiential component. My own personal memory of school, I don't remember sitting in class or reading the book. I remember going out and doing things and experiencing things. And even if these folks don't become scientists, they will at least understand it a little bit better, be more comfortable with it, and it won't be this fearful thing that they shy away from.
Now, how are you going to recruit kids? And then more importantly, how do you fund something like that? How do you take the at-risk kid from Monzo and get funding to make it happen so that it's not a greater divide, but it's open to all kids? How's that process going to work and how many kids are going to get in there?
Well, that's an excellent question. And that's one that we're grappling with right now, is trying to figure out how to do all of that. We've done the budget and we need about 25 students for each of those 2 weeks. And if each of the students pays their own way, the cost gets fairly prohibitive for a lot of families. So we're really hoping we can find some way to underwrite the program or find scholarships. And so I'm in the process of working with our development folks on campus, and we're reaching out ourselves to try and ask for support for this program.
And there are people out there, and I know this from the work that I've done with charitable organizations, that would love to send a kid to camp. That's exactly what it would be called, send a kid to camp, get them out there, get them in nature, and people would like to fund a child and know that their money went to some really great experience like this.
Right, and we hope to explore those opportunities. I know that there are publications, both print and online, that list these opportunities for people to donate and support these kinds of opportunities for kids. So we will plug this program into that so people can find it. You can always find it by going to our website as well.
And tell the website. We can't mention it too much.
It's b2science.org.
b2science.org.
That's right.
And we've got to remember that.
Nice and easy.
Nice and easy. Now, the kids that are doing, the kids, everybody, you know, under 40 for me is a kid, unrelated, the undergraduate students mm-hmm. that are coming, mm-hmm. is that part of an internship program for them? Or what is their participation other than having young people help the young people is a really great idea. It's so relatable. What in terms of what will be expected of them?
That's a great question. So the university is pushing this concept of 100% engagement, where each of the undergraduate students will find some way to do something outside of the classroom. You know, maybe it's a research program in a laboratory, maybe it's working with kids in the community. And so what we envision for this internship program is that students from the U of A, and we're recruiting from a group called Camp Wildcat, and these students have already self-selected to be interested in working with kids on the weekends, taking them camping. We're going to recruit from that group, bring them up for a couple of weeks before the science academies. They will shadow a program that we have at B2 from UCSD. They bring high school students from San Diego and have a grant to do that. And then after that week, they will work with the researchers, both learning how to do the science, but also how to communicate it and how to take it to the younger kids that are going to be coming the week after.
And who wouldn't want to hang around a week with Rafe Sagarin or Franklin Lane? I mean, come
it's
on, those are ones
fun.
That come. And I want to hang around for a week with Matt Adamson. That's who I want to hang around with.
There's some really great people out there. It is a lot of fun.
Really great people. And it is. And that's really important because I think it makes learning easier.
And those interns will be living on site at Biosphere too. And so,
and we really didn't mention that. There's a beautiful facility out there for overnight guests, and you have conferences, and I know Scilog was there for 2 years, and I know there's another thing coming up in January for a group of local food. It's a statewide local food movement, slow food, and how to grow and source more locally, and I was really happy to see that you can stay overnight at Biosphere too, so I'm signing up.
We have lots of conferences and meetings that come and stay. We have a casita village with 25 or so casitas with 2 to 5 bedrooms. They're very comfortable, and people really like it because they get to visit with each other, not just during sort of business hours, if you will, but in sort of that social time where networks and ideas really kind of expand after dinner and out in the quiet, that sort of thing.
You know, when I've been like heads of organizations and we had to plan retreats, mm-hmm. you never want to plan a retreat where you're just in your hometown because everybody goes home at night.
That's right.
And then they leave it and there isn't any of that, you know, germination, whatever, pollination that happens as a result of what happened to process during the day. So I think it's a great idea. And it's far enough. You don't have to plan an overnight trip to get to the overnight trip. I think it's like 40 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
And you think you are in another world because it doesn't look like there's any city around you anywhere. It's pretty magical.
And those values for the conferences and meetings, we also think apply to student groups, right? Whether they're undergraduates or graduate students or these middle and high school students, they will be residential as well. They'll be living there on site. So the experience, you know, doesn't end at when the sun goes down. They're living it 24/7 for that week. And that's really much more impactful.
Now, one of the things that I want to ask you is, of all the things you're doing, is there one thing that's exciting you the most at this point? Or do you feel like you're a whirling dervish with so many things to be excited about?
I guess at this point, I think it's still the whirling dervish sort of perspective. One thing that we pulled off recently that was very successful was 5 discovery nights, late September
Tell
and into October.
Tell us about that.
So we were open for the first time at night, and people could walk around under the glass at night. We had all sorts of family-friendly activities. We had a lot of volunteers from different campus organizations. We had live reptiles. We had telescopes on the lawn. We sold food. It was really a lot of fun. And then you mentioned being interested in staying overnight. We piloted some overnight opportunities where people then, after discovery nights ended at 9, I took them on a flashlight tour under the glass. Then they spent the night, and then we had breakfast and did some ecology and natural history the next morning.
So what did you see with your flashlight? What kind of surprises? I think people are interested.
They are, and things do change inside at night. Just like we know from wildlife cameras that we have placed around the facility, different kinds of animals are active different times of the day. And we don't have bobcats and coyotes inside the facility, but we have lots of cockroaches, which is actually very interesting.
That's what Franklin talked
that's
about.
That's right. The ecosystem is different and simplified because it's not the natural world. And so for whatever reason, the cockroach part of the ecosystem has just exploded. And they come out at night, and some people get really squeamish about that. But they're not your sewer cockroaches. They're actually
kind of
friendly.
Well, they're not attack cockroaches.
No, and they're actually multiple species, and they're very pretty.
Now, and outside, I know another thing you have. You do have visitors. You have regular visitors from the javelina, and we saw the javelina corner when we were out there. The kids got a big thrill out of that, all the kids. Mm-hmm. So there's an outside, just walking from the main body of Biosphere 2 to the casitas. There's a lot of action going on there in terms of wildlife. It's fun.
There's a heck of a lot of wildlife. Biosphere 2, the part that was donated by CDO Ventures and Ed Bass, is about 40 acres. But that sits in the middle of thousands of other acres that there's some cattle grazing, but lots and lots of wildlife. And, you know, we get bobcats, we get deer, we get lots of different skunks. We had 2 rattlesnakes actually yesterday because it was such a warm day. So it's close enough to the natural environment.
Warm day in the end of November.
That's right.
Let's bring that up. Maybe
That's
there's
right.
global warming, do you think?
It's consistent.
I just say that to people. It's like, you think? There are definite signs here.
Yep.
Okay, what about this is what shocks me. I think that I'm pretty much out there a lot and have a finger on the pulse of a lot of things. How do people find out about Discovery Nights? That's something that we would love to do. And even with my close connection to Biosphere 2 and the University of Arizona, I didn't know it. So how are you getting people to know that, other than now people that are listening to Mrs. Green's World will know?
And thank you for that. We did some limited print and radio spots. We had stuff on the website. We've really ramped up our Facebook presence, and that was one way that
you
a lot of people
so
heard
have.
About things.
I should have seen that on Facebook.
And we're planning to repeat the Discovery Nights in the spring.
Okay.
And we're trying to figure out when best to do that. We think March, but that's not definitive yet, but we will put lots of information on the website. And then April, we do the Earth Month, consistent with the Earth Day activities, and do some special things on the weekend during April as well.
And I hope I'll be involved in some of them. I did a live remote out there when I was with terrestrial radio before I had my network, and it was really awesome. And what I loved is that it's really not that far from Phoenix either, where we have millions of people living, and you can come down that back highway. It's a beautiful ride. So you had a lot of people from Tucson and Phoenix. And what a fun family event. You can bring a picnic lunch. We saw lots of great things.
Yeah, it worked really well for families, and we took some data on the people that came, and we had a very different demographic from our typical visitor that we get, in the spring, folks who come here for the winter. These were families coming at night to take advantage of those opportunities, and it really worked well.
And when you think about how much it costs to go to the movies twice, if you have a family of four, and you think about saving up for something like this, I don't know how much it was, but it's really something that it's meaningful. You're fully present. And for me, I was so happy my cell phone doesn't work out there, because that's not what you go out there for, to check your text messages.
Right.
Even the gift shop is awesome. Even the gift shop is awesome. Men were shopping in the gift shop, which I think is noteworthy.
We have some neat things. And actually, part of Discovery Nights, we were handing out annual passes. So everybody that paid admission, full admission, we gave them an annual pass so they can come back anytime this next year.
And you did that for teachers, too.
The teachers, we even gave them half price and then gave them the annual pass and raffled off some school trips as well. Just like organizations in Tucson, like Tucson Values Teachers, we understand the importance of teachers. We understand that they are not supported in the way that they deserve. And so when we can, we try and help out because they are obviously the critical link for this STEM education that we're so interested in.
And the other side of the coin from having a community that cares and gets excited is that we have all of you, that we have Biosphere 2 in our own backyard, and that we have the University of Arizona in the middle of our front yard, and for people to understand, it's so accessible. There are things, I look at the calendar sometime of what's going on at the U of A. I don't know how there are people at any of them ever, because there are so many. And there really is. Like, you could go something every night at the University of Arizona, a film series, art series, science, Institute of the Environment, doing unbelievable things.
There's a lot of great things.
Yeah. Okay, so we have 2 minutes.
Okay.
Fundraising and support. You can donate online.
Yes, and you can go to b2science.org. There are ways that you can navigate to the U of A Foundation to donate. We have
and
need
designate it for Biosphere 2.
That's right, designate it for Biosphere 2. We have need not only for the education outreach component that we've been talking about, but our research is also very expensive as well. And so donations go to support those activities.
Keeping the facility open to me is a big idea of how much it costs to operate, because it is really huge under the glass and so important to all of our future. So everybody, if you want to hear me say one more time that time flies when you're having fun, there, I said it. It flew to me. And when I get the 2-minute warning, I know it's been a great show if it's shocking. So thank you, Kevin Bonine, Dr. Kevin Bonine, Director of Education and Outreach, Biosphere 2, or as we lovingly call it, B2, College of Science, University of Arizona. Wonderful to have you. And next week, we've got another fun show, Doing Great Things, Suzanne McFarlane, the Executive Director of Greater Tucson Leadership, and Ben Korn, who is an alumni of the Alumnus Greater Tucson Leadership Program and the incoming board president. They'll be talking about what they're doing to build tomorrow's leaders in Tucson. So everybody, make it a great green day. Get out to Biosphere 2. If you are driving and hear this, info@Mrs. Green's World, I'll tell you how to get there. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.